सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। We'll chant Keno Upanishad, verses 1 to 5. Keneshitam patati preshitam manaha, kena prana pratama praiti yuktaha, keneshitam vachamimam vadanti, chakshushrotram kavudevo yunatti, shrotrasya shrotram manaso mano yad vachoha vachagumsavup, प्राणस्य प्राणः चक्षुषश्चक्षुरतिमुच्य धीरा प्रेत्यास्मालोकाधमृता भवन्ति न तत्र चक्षुर्गच्छति न वाग्गच्छति नो मनो न विद्मो न विजानीमो यतैतदनुशिष्यात् अन्यदेव तद्विदितादतो अविदितादति इति शुश्रुम पूर्वेशाम येनस्तद्व्याच चक्षिरे यद्वाचानभ्युदितं येन वागभ्युद्यते तदेव ब्रह्मत्वं विद्धि नेदं यदिदमुपासते। केनोपनिषद इज गॉट दिस नेम बिकॉज द उपनिषद स्टार्ट्स विथ स्टूडेंट्स क्वेश्चन वेयर ही सेज Kena ishitam patati preshitam manaha. So the Upanishad starts with the word Kena. It's actually the question of the student. It's a question answer session between the Shishya and Guru. Knowledge is never given, it is taken. So the Upanishadic tradition is also the same, where the student, after having qualified, goes to the Guru, surrenders, and then asks the question, and when the Shishya is ready, the teacher gives the knowledge. So here there is no introduction for the student or the teacher. Directly they come to the question and answer. So the first question when the student asks, from that itself we know what kind of a student is he or she and how much the person has put in the effort, what all they have done in terms of reflection. So whenever we ask anything, we get exposed. People will know how much we know, people will know how much we don't know. When we keep quiet, they will think that we know everything. But the moment we start talking, they know how much we know. So, kena ishitam patati preshitam manaha. Kena prana pratama praiti yuktaha. Kena ishitam vachamimam vadanti. Chakshuhu shrotram kavudevaha. Kavudevaha nakti. In this question itself, the student is clearly telling the teacher that he has already thought about the panchakosha, the five sheets. What are the five sheets? The five sheets are annamaya kosha, food sheet, pranamaya kosha, vital air sheet, manomaya kosha, mental sheet, Vijnanamaya kosha, which is intellectual sheet, and Anandamaya kosha, which is bliss sheet. These are the five sheets covering the Atma as it were. And if you want to put the same five sheets in different format, you can call it as body, mind and intellect. The body, mind, intellect enlivened by the Atma is you, me and all of us. So the student here has done his part of reflection. And he has a question as to, he has no doubt about the divinity. Divinity here meaning, devaha meaning the illumining factor. The senses, when they see an object, they are making the object known for us. So the light with which the senses make the object known doesn't seem to be coming from the senses, because the senses are, the physical body and the senses and the mind intellect, all these are a combination of the five elements. In fact, the basic is this, that the gross body is mixed. It's a mixture of five elements: space, air, fire, water, and earth. Now, in this, the earth, for example, if you take, is not pure earth. There is little bit of water, there is little bit of air, fire, space, everything. So therefore we say this gross body is a mixture of five gross elements which has undergone a process called panchikarana. From the subtle elements, this gross elements have come about, and the mixture of gross elements has brought about the gross body. So the five elements means the pure space, pure air, pure fire, pure water, pure earth. See, I'll give you an example. Now, if you have a namkeen at home, self-made namkeen, the homemade namkeen you have. You have little bit of makhana, you have little bit of mungfali, you have little bit of all other stuff thrown into it. So when you see that namkeen at home, it's a mixture. There is makhana, there is everything. It's a mixture. Now, before that mixture, each one should have existed separately. Makhana separate, mungfali separate, everything separate, separate must have existed. Similarly, the mixture, because when we see the gross, see, the knowledge has to proceed from the known to the unknown. So when you analyze the known is made up of these gross elements. And this gross elements is the mixture, it's not pure. You take earth, there is little bit of water element in it, there is a little bit of fire, space, everything. So therefore, from there we deduct and say they must have existed before in its purest form. And from our observation, we know that these elements per se are lifeless. They don't have sentience. But now, when I'm there here now as Jiva, there is sentience. I am seeing everything around me, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. So this sentience, is it belonging to it originally, or is it borrowed from something, or is it a product of this combination? This is basically his question. It doesn't seem that it is part of it. So his question, if you want to modify what he is asking, is he wants to know about the pure consciousness. What is that God principle? That is his question. The very fact that he is interested in it means what? He has analyzed, he has gone through the experiences in the world, and he has analyzed and understood that they are only good for buying iron and gold, nothing more. They cannot give me that bliss that I am looking for. Therefore, I want to know what is that. So he is only interested in that. So if you want to put it in a layman's term, his question is, who is God? But then that will be like simplifying it too much. So he wants to know, this enlivening factor, this sentient principle, is it a part of this, or is it a product, or is it apart? Is it something else beyond? What is that? So he's saying, kau devaha yunakti. What is that deva which seems to be uniting all this? Devaha means the illuminating source. So he says, by whom propelled, willed, and directed does the mind alight on objects? Endowed by whom does the primeval prana vital air function? By whom willed does speech originate? What spirit indeed directs the eye and ear? So he is covering sense organs of perception, sense organs of action, pranas, mind, intellect, everything. So he is clearly understanding that all of them seems to be per se insentient. But they seem to be functioning sentiently now. So is this something inherent, or is it something borrowed from something else, and is it a product of it? This is this question for which the guru is answering. Have we done the answer, or we have not done? Anybody? Did I do only verse 1, or did I also do verse 2?
I don't think we have done it.
We haven't done verse 2. Okay, we'll do it again, no problem. Let's chant verse number 2, mantra 2. Shrotrasya shrotram manaso mano yat vachoha vachagum savu pranasya pranaha chakshushas chakshurati mucha dhira prityasma loka damrata bhavanti Shrotrasya shrotram manaso mano yat vachoha vachagum savu pranasya pranaha chakshushas chakshurati mucha dhira prityasma loka Dandata Bhavanti. That which indeed is the ear of the ear. Shrotrasya Shrotra. I think we did this also. Anyway, doesn't matter. We'll do it once again.
We've done this.
Yeah, it's okay. We'll do it once again. This is the answer by the Guru. See, if you see this Upanishad, doesn't say the Guru's Shishya's name, doesn't say the Guru's name. If you go to Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna Uvacha, Bhagavan Vach, Sri Bhagavan Vach, here kuch bhi nahi. Straight, direct to the point. So, this is the answer given by the Guru. And the answer given by the Guru is over when he says, Shrotrasya Shrotram. The entire Upanishad is over. Then everything else is explanation. So, Shrotrasya Shrotram. That's the answer and the Upanishad. The whole Upanishad is this. Shrotrasya Shrotram. Now, class katam. You can go and contemplate for the entire 2021 and come back. That's what he's saying. That which indeed is the ear of the ear. Shrotrasya Shrotam. Manaso mano. Manasaha mana means mind of the mind. Ear of the ear, mind of the mind. Shrotrasya Shrotam. Manaso mano. Vachoha vachakam. Vachoha vachakam means speech of the speech. And then Pranasya prana, the prana of the prana. Chakshushas chakshu, eye of the eye. This is the answer. So, manaso mano, prana ha prana, prana vacha ha vacha, chakshushas chakshu is all same thing like shrotrasya shrotram. So, shrotrasya shrotram is the answer. And then, the next line he says, the wise having completely freed and risen above this world, become immortal. So what is the benefit of this knowledge? That is spoken. Karma phalam, jnana phalam. Such an action, such knowing the truth about that, what happens to you? It says, you become immortal. This is the result you get, teachers. So first line, if you see, question was, is the pure consciousness, because this senses per se doesn't seem to have consciousness, but they are now functioning consciously. So, is this consciousness part of it or is it borrowed? Now, most of us, what are we thinking? We are thinking that we ourselves are all intelligent, all the glory belongs to us, isn't it? That's why this pride, all this is coming. All this achievement is mine, mine, mine. So if you remember in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which was called as Vibhuti Yoga, Bhagavan's Vibhuti, the whole thing is the glory of the Lord. So the intelligence that you have is actually borrowed. The pure consciousness is enlivening the intellect. As a result, you are able to be intelligent. Now you may ask, isn't that pure consciousness enlivening even the dull-headed? Yes. But the dull-headed is doing nothing, therefore the enlivening factor of the consciousness is not expressed brilliantly there. It's like, you know, the brass vessel which is oxidized. Once the oxidized portion is removed, the shine from within will be seen. So the shine from within in the dull-headed is not seen because of that fellow. That doesn't mean the glory is not there. And when you put in that effort and remove that oxidization, the beauty of the Atma reveals itself. So all the glory actually belongs to Brahman. So this is the humility. This is the bhava. In fact, the more you know really the depth in any field, when you know the truth in depth, not necessarily in spiritual field, even in any other material field, you will become humble. So you are always humble and you always are grateful to the source. So here also he says, that is what he is saying, real source is Atma. If you see in the translation, Swamiji's book, ear of the ear, the first ear is in capital E. The second ear is in small letter E. So capital letter E represents the pure consciousness Atma. The small letter E represents the ear. When he says ear, he doesn't mean this physical ear, because this physical ear is there even in a person who can't hear. Even in a deaf person, the physical ear is there. Even in a blind person, this eye portion physically is there. But he can't see. The other person who has this physical ear, but one who is deaf cannot hear. So, ear of the ear means, not this physical ear, you go inside, in the tenth center, that ear, which is tracing backwards. So, he wants to say, in short, that the Atma which is within you is sentient, and the sentiency is reflected through this body, mind and intellect. And when the sentience of the Atma is reflected through this body, mind, intellect, you and me, all of us are who? We are all called as RC. RC means reflected consciousness. The sun above falls on all surfaces, but wherever there is mirror, it reflects. So due to our subtle body, the pure consciousness reflects, and we are all reflected consciousness. So therefore, the consciousness which you see manifested in this senses, this organs of perception, action, mind, intellect, all this are reflected. They per se are inert. So the source is the Atma, the permanent factor. So if you see in the book, ear of the ear, the first E is capital E, second E is small. Then again when he says mind of the mind, the first mind is capital M, second mind is small M. Then speech of the speech, same thing. Then you go to prana of the prana, same thing. Eye of the eye, same thing. So if you trace back, you will find the truth. So you cannot find it with these eyes. You have to trace back. So what he wants to say is, the one which actually enlivens is neither the part nor the product. It is something that is apart, beyond. And that is the source. From that only all this is come, is what he wants to say. The entire Upanishad's teaching is Tat Tvam Asi. That thou art. All Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita, everything teaches that only. Tat Tvam Asi. Common meaning of the word Tvam is this individual. But when you go deeply and see what is the meaning of the word Tvam, it is a pure consciousness. Similarly, the outside, the meaning of the Tat is Ishvara. When you go deeply and see, it is the pure consciousness. So the pure consciousness is the underlying factor in both the Jiva and the Ishvara. Therefore the Jiva is equal to Ishvara. The Jiva, out of ignorance, only identifying at the surface level, thinks I am limited. But the Jiva, once gained knowledge, understands that I am the pure consciousness, which is not limited, which is sarvajna, sarvagata. So therefore, he wants to tell you that it is shrotrasya shrotram. Go backwards. You understand? You can't go outward and know the truth. When you go backwards, you know. So it is the ear of the ear. So the second ear cannot function without the first ear. And not only that, it is actually the real subject. That is the real subject. See, you are seeing this object, right? This cup you are seeing. Now I am seeing this cup. So, I am aware that I am seeing the cup. So in this, my eyes are the subject and cup is the object. But I am aware behind. So thought is there. So then mind becomes the subject. Then I am aware of the mind also. Then that becomes the subject. That awareness becomes the subject. So that is the real subject. This is not the real subject. That's what he wants to say. So when the eyes are seeing the cup, cup is the object, eyes are the subject. But the mind thought of the eye is there. That mind is the subject, this is the object, eye becomes the object. Then I can become aware of my mind also. So then mind becomes the object. Then what is there? Atma. After that there is no awareness of Atma. Atma is awareness. Therefore that is the ultimate subject. So that's what he's saying. The real subject, the real source, the real you is that ear which is sitting inside, which is reflected through this. In this tamasha, you misunderstand yourself to be this reflected consciousness, and due to that all problem comes. All problem comes because of that. Once I understand that I am this reflected consciousness, then I am limited. I am more with compared to someone who has less. I have less compared to someone who has more. So I am always insecure. I want to do this. I want to do that. All this tamasha, samsara you get in because of not knowing this. So this is excellent. That which indeed is the ear of the ear. Who is that deva? You are asking. No. That's the real subject. So what he wants to say is, you are not the conscious, limited conscious being who is part of this world. You are actually that consciousness which is illumining the senses and the whole world. See, for a blind person, is there that color and form world? Let us split the world into five. Color and form world, sound world, smell world, taste world and touch world. Isn't it? When we don't have that ear, when we are deaf, 1/5 of the world is gone. When we are blind, 1/5 of the world is gone. If somebody is deaf and blind, 2/5 of the world is gone. So, when those particular sense organs of perception are not working, that much world is gone. Correct? So now, we are thinking, this world is there, in which we are there, and we are sentiently seeing all this. And the sun outside is lighting the world. Even if the sun outside is lighting the world, if the consciousness from within is not lighting your eyes, as far as you are concerned, the objects and beings of the world is not there. That world doesn't exist for you. So therefore, who is illumining this world? You are illumining this world. Are you getting it? So once you go deeply and reflect, then you understand that you are the one who is actually the illumining factor. You are not the one who is seeing, and then, you know, once you think that you are this one who is seeing this, and you see the object, you develop the desire, you want it. What you are not understanding, it is your power with which the whole world is lit. You are the one who is lighting the whole world. That's your power. But not realizing that power, you are going and begging. When your eyes see the world, you want the world. I want this. I want that. But once you go deeply and reflect this, then you understand that you are that subject which is actually illuminating. I think in one of the classes I did talk about the theory of perception that Swamiji talks about in the book Vedanta Treatise. It is actually a beautiful lecture given by Swami Ramatirtha. It's a fascinating portion, the theory of perception. It is there in the part C of Vedanta Treatise book. So, there he says, the consciousness from outside strikes the consciousness from within, because there is only consciousness everywhere. In this action and reaction, The mind comes, and no sooner the mind comes, the world is projected. So the moment I understand this, what this Upanishad is trying to say, the year of the year, that is enough to forget about everything else, mind of the mind and all, speech of the speech, prana of the prana. In short, what he wants to say is the real subject is the Atma. And that is what is become this world. So, the entire world is come from that one source, Brahman. But once we are caught in this world, we don't ask questions like this Upanishadic student. We see this world, we think we are this limited individual, we run after, we want to acquire, enjoy, we get caught in this samsara. Whereas this individual student is asking this question. He says, that which indeed is the ear of the ear, mind of the mind, prana of the prana, of the creation, the Guru's. Once you know what happens, he says, the wise person, dhiraha, dhiraha means wise and courageous person. See, to be wise, you need to be courageous. Because wise person questions the obvious. What the mass has accepted, he questions. Questions not because he wants to be different from the mass. He wants to question everything, not accept anything for granted. Everything, you know. We have taken everything for granted. We accept a certain thing. This is how it should be. We don't question why. Why not? See, like I've said before, if the world is what it appears to be, then we don't need the scriptures. It is not what it appears to be. Therefore, we need the scriptures. For example, in common appearance, it seems the sun is revolving around the earth. Because we see sun coming and going. That's why we also say sun is rising, sun is setting. But actually the truth is earth is revolving. Sun is not rising or setting. Similarly, in common appearance, it seems that the earth is flat. But it is not flat. Similarly, the light appears to be coming from the moon at night. But there is no light coming from the moon. It is the light of the sun which is reflected. So, when we question, we then begin to know the truth. Similarly, when I see, it looks like these eyes have the potential to see by itself. No, it is the light from within the, which is called as Atma, coming through this. Therefore, it looks like these eyes have life, the mind has life, but per se they don't have life. Real source is Atma, which is you. You are that sentient being. You are that truth. This is what you want. And once you know this, and to know this, you got to question everything that is being accepted in this world outside. And the more and more you question everything that is being accepted in the world outside, the more and more you will be alienated. You will become alone. You will be central. You will have to go alone. They will not accept. Who is this fellow? Questioning everything. They cannot take it. In fact, when Galileo said the truth, he was stoned to death. Nobody accepted that. Because Bible says something else, you are saying something else. How can we accept? Finish the film. This is the problem. Even if Christ were to come and say it, they won't accept. They say, you are duplicate Christ. Sorry. He will not accept. Even if Adi Shankara comes, they say, yeah, you are duplicate. You forget it. We don't want to. The problem is, nobody really wants to do the independent thinking or original questioning. Just mechanically accepting. So here, if you see, once you come to Upanishads, they are very different from the Bhagavad Gita. They go deep. They don't means words. They don't want any name, fame, power, position, nothing. They just want to say the truth and get up. And that also is not coming out and saying. Whoever goes to them, they are saying. So here he says, the wise having become freed completely, risen above from the world. When do you rise above the world? You rise above anything when you come to know about that. Once you gain the knowledge, you rise above. Till you don't know, you will be under that only. We were not knowing truth about lightning and thunder. We were afraid. Once science started questioning that and started understanding, those who have that knowledge, they are not afraid of it. Science makes use of it. So, through knowledge, through questioning, through analyzing, by seeing things as they are, you become absolutely free. So you are bound now, you are caught now in this samsara because you don't know the truth. You think this Madhushri, this Sadhana, this Sheta, this Ami, Dave, the what? Subject. This is reflected consciousness. But the real subject is the pure consciousness which is same in Madhu, Sadhana, Shweta, Ami, Lakshmi Narayan. Once I know this, then why will I get caught in this samsara? The moment I forget that, in the self-forgetfulness, Madhushri comes. And the moment Madhushri comes, Madhushri and her friends, enemies, everything comes. Then the samsara begins. Till then, no samsara. So, for the person who is known the truth, the samsara dissolves instantly. Instantly dissolves. That's why he means by becoming free. We cannot become free in any other way. We think we'll become free by through wealth, through relationships, through name, fame, power, position, contacts. No. The only way you become free is knowing the truth about yourself. That is it. The benefit of this knowledge, which you get through the inquiry. See, the beauty is, it's not knowing because you heard it from a guru. No. You have to internally gain that. So the scriptures are saying something, the guru is explaining it, you have to go back, reflect, and when you see it, then the whole thing dissolves. Like, you know, what would have been the people's way of thinking when they were thinking that the earth is stationary and sun is revolving around the earth? The moment they knew the truth that we are only revolving, then accordingly everything changes. So, we got to constantly question our conditionings today. We don't. That's why we don't become free. So that's what the Upanishad is saying. The wise having completely freed, how? Through knowledge, through inquiry. And reason above this world. World means dvandvas, pairs of opposites. What is the world? Heat, cold. Pleasure, pain. Joy, sorrow. Censure, praise. Honor, dishonor. This is the world. Everybody's world is this. At the physical level, heat and cold. And pleasure and pain. And joy and sorrow at the mental level. Then, censure, praise or honor, dishonor at the intellectual level. So this is the world, pairs of opposites. So one who knows the truth becomes free from these pairs of opposites. We don't become free from these pairs of opposites. We are all caught in the pairs of opposites. For example, now in Delhi it is cold. So you want warm, heat. You love heat. Now after a few months, 3-4 months later, it will become hot, then you want cool air conditioner. So, this external world will be constantly changing, heat and cold. Heat sometimes gives you pleasure, sometimes gives you pain. Cold sometimes gives you pleasure, sometimes gives you pain. So, like this, it's constantly changing. And if I think I am this limited individual, this body will obviously be affected by the heat and cold. Therefore, I will also be affected. I will also go through change. I will suffer. That is samsara. But when I understand that I am not this body, but the Atma inside, then these changes doesn't affect me. As far as I am concerned, I have no samsara. I will give whatever little warm clothes needed for this body when it is cold, but I will not get mentally affected. The samsara is not there for me. When we say samsara, the samsara is not the feeling of the heat or feeling of the cold. Samsara is the affectation that is brought about by the respective feeling. That's samsara. So I become free from the pangs of this world. The samsara. The samsara is created due to this wrong understanding. So that problem is here. And all our life, instead of solving it here, they're trying to solve it outside. All our life. So what are we doing? We get educated. We go to school. We get educated. And we want to earn money. Why we want to earn money? So that we can have a big house. And then a lot of garden around us. And then, you know, air conditioner, heater. Have enough money to travel around the world, we can see. So we think we have created all this so that I will enjoy and become free. But you only create more and more samsara and problem for yourself. Mental samsara is created even more. Isn't it? There is never enough. When is enough? That's the question we ask. Never ever you feel that way. There is never a time in your life you feel that you have more than enough. Already. So therefore, you are lost in the samsara, which that person doesn't have. When he scrutinizes this and he realizes the truth, not because he heard about it in the class. He will forget about it once the class is over. But once you go deep inside what is being discussed in this text by the Guru, and you start getting into that inquiry, you will go and realize that subject. And once you realize that subject, that thou art, then you will become free from the world. Rise above the world. Rise above the world means you will continue. Rise above doesn't mean you will be levitated. All, everywhere you will be flying. Rising above the world means the world thereafter cannot affect you. Which means what? You have not done anything in the outside world. You have not changed it. You cannot. Even if you have become Mahatma, there will be people who will criticize you. There will be people who will praise you. This is how life is. You know, if you go by car, that's why this fellow is going by car. Spiritual fellow should be walking. Hey, if one fellow walks, then they say, yeah, this stupid fellow doesn't go to work, he always walks. If he had gone to work, he could go by car. So, anything you do, you don't do, they will criticize, they will praise, they'll do anything. Even in general psychology, if you see, if you like somebody, na, whatever they do, you will appreciate. But don't like them. Whatever they do, you will find fault. So, world will continue to be this phase of opposite. Like Jesus Christ says, iniquity there shall be. Woe unto you if you be the cause of it. The iniquity will not change. Rising above the world. Oh, okay. I studied Kena Upanishad. I understood what the Guru is saying in Mantra 2. I have become free from the world. Means what? From now on when I get out in the world, Corona will not be there for me. No. Now on when I get out of my house, traffic jam will not be there for me. Everybody will give space to me as if I am an ambulance. Nothing like that will happen. Same thing will continue. If somebody is constantly finding fault with you, they will continue finding fault with you. So, this is not going to change. But what drastic change that happens is, you have not, you are not going to get affected by that anymore. That affectation will not be there. There is no more reaction from your point of view, from your angle. That's what he says. The wise having completely freed. When do you become completely freed? When you know the knowledge. See, for example, you are this waker and you go to sleep. Or, forget about that waking dream example. We have spoken about it very often. There's another example which I discussed. You only book the ticket to watch a horror movie. Everybody said it's a very nice movie, you must watch it. So you booked the ticket with your friend. Both of you went there. 5 minutes, 10 minutes before the movie started, you went. You had already ordered popcorn, everything online. Go sit there, it's an AC room, AC cater, you know. You sit there, aram se, relax, the popcorn comes, and you're eating, all the advertisements and everything starts, and then slowly the movie starts. And slowly the whole story unwinds. And then you come to the edge of the seat. You are sitting relaxed. Now you come to the edge of the seat. Heart is pumping fast. You are sweating in an air-conditioned theater. You are thinking, should I leave this and go? You know well that this is movie. It is something that is projected. The story. But you got so involved that you are not free now. So in other words, what is being projected on the screen seems to affect you. The heart is pumping very fast now. You are sweating. You are not comfortable. You are scared. Why all this has happened? Why you are not free? Because you have got involved. Then after some time, interval comes or the movie is over, they switch on the light and everything, then you suddenly see, oh my God, then you know, okay, you have realized that now I'm not this, this is not happening here. You're not seeing any ghost, nothing. This is happening in the mind, in each one of us. We are prisoning ourselves in our mind. We have to free ourselves. That's why Swami Ramakrishna says, a slave is a slave because he is free. You are free. You have enslaved yourself. You allowed everybody's words to condition you from childhood. Oh, you look good. You look bad. You look smart. You are smart. You are dull. You are rich. You are poor. You all this madness, you allowed yourself to be conditioned. And now, you are going through all the effects of the conditioning. And now if you question and you have the courage to remove all the conditionings and become mentally free. That's what he's saying. The wise one, Dhiraha, who understood this year of the year. See, when you go to the movie theater, what is happening? There is this projector. The projector light and then there is this film roll. Now, in modern technology, what it is, I don't know. The film roll is rotating at particular speed. And then the projector is projecting it. You are lost in that film roll's whatever is being, you know, picturized. After it's captured in the film roll and revolved at the particular speed, you get involved in that. Tragedy, comedy, horror, everything, you get involved. But actually behind everything, what is there? Only that light is there. Similarly, behind all this, the light is that subject, pure consciousness, and then the thoughts are that film roll running. The screen is our eyes, ears, nose, tongue and skin. On that the screen, we are seeing this world. And each one according to our thought conditioning, we are having our own world. Somebody is having a romantic world, somebody is having a horror world, somebody is having a tragedy, somebody is having comedy. All this tamasha is going on. So therefore he says, year of the year. That's all. What the entire Gita talks for 18 years, what he studied for almost 10, 12 years. He finished it in one sentence. Year after year, Hari Om, he left. He didn't leave. He just explains. This is all he says. Then the rest of the verses are all explanation of this. Shrotrasya Shrotam. Ogya. You keep going from the Shrotra backwards. The problem is from the Shrotra you are going outward. This year, you're going outward. With the eyes, you're going outward. You are hearing the sound. You are seeing this cup. Ah, this cup is very nice. Where did you get this? I got it in Thailand. Okay, I am also going to Thailand. And next minute, you are also in Thailand. And then you see somebody in Thailand, you like them, you get married. And then you settle there, and then from there, this is tamasha is going on. So what is happening in us is, what we see, we are going in that direction, outward. And we are perpetuating this samsara. If you really want to cut this samsara, you have to go in the opposite direction. Now this is the problem. This is the real spiritual journey. Now how many of us have the guts to go in the opposite direction? And if you start going in the opposite direction, world will laugh. But when they laugh, you should understand actually you are going in the right direction. They are going in the opposite direction. This is where the conviction comes. When you lack the conviction, you think that they are all going in the right direction, you are going in the opposite direction. Actually, you are the one who is going in the right direction, they are all going in the opposite direction. But do you have the courage? Do you have the conviction? Do you see it that way? This is the problem. That is why Bhagavad Gita says, Ya Pashyat, Sa Pashyat. Whoever sees it, we don't know what to do. In fact, even here in the Upanishad is coming. We also don't know, we don't know how to teach it, he will say. Next. Because this is something which is very subjective. How to teach this? How to impart this perception to somebody who is having a completely opposite perception? How to do this? Where there is Brahman, you are seeing the world. Where there is a rope, you are seeing a snake. Where there is a boulder, you are seeing an elephant. How to do this? You know, even recently somebody sent me one WhatsApp picture. One side it is like a squirrel. I think one side it looks like a squirrel. The other side it looks like a horse. It's a beautiful picture. To ulta karke dekhenge, then it will be like horse. You see, this way it will be like a squirrel. Or a rabbit, something like that. So I forgot now. So, the perception. Our perception is the ulta of the Upanishad's perception. And the Upanishad's perception is the right perception. How do you say it's the right perception? Anything that is right means you will be relaxed. Anything that is ulta means you will be intentional. You are intention now. You are not normal. You are intention. Constant insecurity. Fear. Anxiety. Greed. Even just before this class, you know, Madhuji was talking about that problem happening in America. And then Sadhana said, you know, everywhere there is problem going on. Disharmony, this, that. Everywhere this nonsense is going. Everybody is intention. Not as nobody has sense is another thing that they said. Why all this is happening? You have lost the ability to think. Nobody wants, everybody is in a hurry to make it big. And for them to make it big means that materialistically big. So that is the problem. If you can stop and think, that requires that even to stop, you need courage. Sometimes, you know, all of us need to take this break forcefully. See, a routine mechanical comfort zone that we settle into. That's why the first law of Newton, he says, law of gravity, the first one he says, an object remains in motion or in static condition unless and until an external object acts upon. An object continues to be in motion or in static condition unless and until an external force acts upon. Something will be constantly rotating, mechanical activity will be going on. Something comes and stops it, like corona has to come and stop. Then we think, yeah, can I do it in another way? Or something will be lazy, lethargic, sitting, quiet. Somebody has to come and push, and then that fellow runs. So, this is what is happening. The whole world is going mechanically. We are also functioning mechanically. We don't stop and question. Wise fellow, very rare, very rare. One fellow thinks, why can't it be this way? Why can't it be this way? That question doesn't come only. So, that question comes to that fellow. And the scriptures are giving him direction. From that he questions and sees it. And when he sees it that way, now the correction has happened. See, it's like this. When you are watching a movie, on the screen the movie is projected. And in one particular area of the screen, let's say left side middle, there is some patch you are seeing. So the picture is not clear. So you are sending people to clean the screen. And they are cleaning also, but still the patch is not going. What does it mean? It means that patch is because it's a small blot that is there on the lens of the projector. And that is why it is projected as a, you know, so full lot of blot on the screen. So you then, once you understand, hey, how much I am cleaning, still it's not going. So why can't it be on the lens? So then if I start taking the cloth and wiping after looking at that small spot on that lens, then the whole big problem will become sorted out. This question doesn't come to us. This question doesn't come to us. I have tried through bicycle, I have tried through motorcycle, I have tried through cars, I have tried through cell phone, jet, you know, private jet, everything I have tried, but the problem seems to continue. So what does it mean? That means the problem is not outside, the problem is within me. If there is something wrong in the way I am perceiving myself, since I am perceiving myself to be this limited individual, the limited individual needs to feel complete by how? By having a bicycle, by having a motorcycle, by having a car. When I have the car, I need to have a partner next to me. And then I have to have children. Then I have to have this. Then I have to have a private jet. Then I have to have too many people as my bodyguards. Then only I feel complete. But in spite of all that, I still, the insecurity still is continuing. So much I have done and still the insecurity is continuing. Now compare that with that example. Have this movie theater screen me. The blot is not going. How much ever I clean the screen, then the possibility is that it could be on the projector. No? We never think like that. We never think the problem is me and the solution is me. But the day you started thinking that the problem is me and you start admitting that, you have become wise. That's what the poem Turkey and the Ant is saying. Poem Turkey and the Ant. The turkey is fed up of eating the same grain. So it goes to the garden and eats all the ants. And the young ones which is following the turkey, the mother bird, they are afraid of eating the ants because the ants move and the grain doesn't move. So the mother bird is saying, yeah, don't worry. The ant is delicious. Simply enjoy, nothing, no harm. And everybody is eating, all their turkey are eating mountain of ants for breakfast. When they are destroying mountain of ants, the mother bird is saying, how blessed our life could be if only we could escape the poulterer's knife. And during Christmas, we are all cooked. Turkey is cooked. This tradition is there. And one turkey, probably 7 or 8 fellows eat once in a year. And that this turkey is criticized. Human beings are full of gluttony. Due to this gluttony, they are killing us. Man cursed man. You know, criticized. And then the poet concludes by saying, here you remark another sin, with thine own conscience look within. Control thy more voracious will, nor for a breakfast nation's skill. Before you start criticizing the other, look within. Here you remark another sin. Before you remark another sin, with thy own conscience and look within. Control thy more voracious will means the tongue. to control your senses, nor for a breakfast nation skill. You are killing one break, for one breakfast you are killing a nation of ants. What about lunch and dinner 365 days? And once in a year, seven fellows get together and eat one turkey and you are criticizing that. So in other words, this is called the problem of introversion. So the Upanishads simply change the direction. Once you start studying this, the direction is changed. And you start getting in and cleansing yourself. Till then you were thinking of changing this, changing that. That system is not right. This fellow is not right. That fellow is not right. We have all the opinion. And you may not be wrong. And you correct that fellow, bring some other problem will. This fellow, this problem will be there. You bring that fellow, another problem. This will continue. This is not going to solve. That doesn't mean we don't do all those changes outside. But you cannot afford to not bring about that change within, the perceptional change. That is here. That's why Upanishad, Bhagavad Gita says, Ya Prashyati Sapsha. I don't know what to do. Whoever sees it, Baba, leave me alone, Jesus. The teacher is saying, he is coming and teaching in the class. One fellow instantly understands. Another fellow goes back, thinks and understands. One fellow neither understands instantly, doesn't understand, and he goes back and thinks. Then he comes back, questions and then understands. Another fellow after questioning, after explanation, still doesn't understand. Same teacher, same subject. What you can do? That's why the Upanishads and Bhagavad Gita, the gurus, they say, Baba, ya pashyati sa pashyati. We don't know. That's coming. Because it's difficult to turn introvert and go within and find the source. If at all you would have learned about that source. Till you learn about that source, you don't become free. But when that learning becomes your subjective experience, then you become instantly free from this samsara. Then you rise above the world. Then the world continues as it is, it stops affecting. Thereafter, all this doesn't affect you. World cannot influence you thereafter anymore. You will begin to influence the world. That's the power, that's the effect you get. Because you then understand that I am actually the source. I am not the end product. I am actually the source. This is the thinking difference Mahatma Gandhiji had. Or people like Mahatma Gandhiji, whoever fought for Indian freedom, Nehru, Sardar Vallabhbhai Patel, Bhagat Singh, Netaji, everyone whoever fought for this Indian freedom, they thought differently. They said, yeah, these guys have come to take our wealth. They are taking from us. We are the givers. We are the takers. Everybody else said, we are taking. Yes, sir. Good morning, sir. You are our boss. They said, these fellows are not our boss. This is ours. We are the boss. Belongs to us. And they fought. From where that courage is coming, that thinking, the perceptional change, the way you think. So that's why the leader's job is to make them change their mindset. Once you change the mindset, the way they function will be different. And that's why we say, even in corporate and everywhere, it's a struggle. It takes time. Nobody's mindset changes that easily. Some kind of pandemic came and this thing happened. And I think this class probably immediately started as soon as they announced the lockdown or something. I don't remember now. But there are some classes, I didn't know that we were going to be stuck like this for 9 months. So far I think almost 9 months over. Maybe another 9 months will go in this. I don't know how long it will take. So initially some of the other classes, they said, sir, let's not do any Zoom game and all. This will be over soon. Then we will start again. Nothing like me meeting personally with you. I also said, okay. Because I myself didn't know how long this is going to happen. Then after some time it passed, 1 month passed, so they contacted me, sir, this doesn't seem to ending, so let us start Zoom. And initially we had a lot of problems, this, that, their mindset is not accepting. Now everybody is comfortable. Now probably they don't want me to come back. So what I'm trying to say is, it's not easy. We get caught in the comfort zone. We think the comfort zone is good for me. Actually, the comfort zone is my actual enemy. Comfort zone is my actual enemy. Lot of parents, they think that comfort zone they have to give to children. They are thinking that they are doing the right thing for the children, but they are actually doing the ulta, spoiling them. So, that struggle, once you get this, yeah, it cannot be this, you know. Everybody is going this way. You got to stop and think, and once you take the step back and reflect, then you become the wise. Only then you start tracing backwards, then you become free. There's a very, very small book called Who Moved My Cheese? You read that book, it's very interesting. The rats try to find the cheese and they struggle and they somehow find it. They go on eating and they become comfortable. There's another set of rats, they don't become comfortable and complacent. They move on. So we all have become complacent in life. This complacency is the biggest problem. Absolute complacency. Nobody really thinks or questions anything. Why can't it be this way? Why should it have to be this way? Anything that you have heard till date, you question that. But for that you have to put in effort, you have to think, I don't want, I rather accept. Wedding means it should have happened this way only. No, nothing doing. Sir, we cannot do simple wedding. It has to be destination. It has to be this, it has to be that. But how did you conduct wedding in this corona? How did you do this? Some kind of a force is required. Even then, I don't think so. Now people have changed their thinking. It is just because they have no choice. Now they are doing this way. Once this problem is over, they'll get back to it 20 times more. We are not saying this is the right thing or that's the right thing. But you have a mindset. It doesn't change. That's all I'm trying to say. Similarly, we have this mindset. But the student has the doubt. That's why he's a student. Doubt means he's not a doubting Thomas. He understood, kuch to galat hai. In this there is something wrong. And he is brought to the guru. And the guru makes him realize, there are problem here. Wahan jaake thoda sahi karo. You know that blot is there, not on the screen, but on the projector. Hear this thinking. What is the thinking? I am this Lakshmi Narayan, this height, this weight, this color, this form, this name. All this when you question and you begin to see, then suddenly it's a completely different world altogether. And that same thing doesn't bother you anymore. Today it was affecting you. So if you see in the book, Swamiji has given that figure, you know, the diagram. Ear of the ear. He's put of the ear on one side, ear, the capital E, ear on one side. The capital E represents the self, the pure consciousness. Of the ear represents all the organs of perception and all that. If you see there, pure consciousness, supreme self, God, which is changeless, imperishable, transcendental. That is this capital E, ear, the subject, the Atma. Of the ear, that small e, there he has put organs of perception, organs of action, the physiological functions which is called pranas, mind, intellect, which are changing in nature, perishable and terrestrial. So once you question this, then you identify, you shift your focus. It's shifting the focus. Once you have shifted your focus, all your problems solve. Focus today is extroverted. And once we shift the focus from extroversion to inward, Instantly all problems solved. Majority is not there, not bothering you. You are giving importance to it and that is bothering you. You go on listening to those news, those things again and again. Get agitated, your BP goes up. Who's asked you to do all that? You do it because your mind is wanting it. Without it, it cannot be comfortable. So, if you shift your attention from small e ear to the big e ear, that subject, like I told you, this cup is the object. My eyes is the subject. Then thoughts is the subject, I is the object. Then thoughts become the subject, sorry, object. Awareness becomes the subject. That awareness never becomes the object. Everything else can be objectified. But that is always the subject. And that subject is the final. Once you have reached that, this entire samsara collapses. Collapses means what? At the external level it will be there. But you will be in it like mercury on paper. Or lotus in water. You will be in this world enjoying. Nothing can affect you. As if the mercury is there on the paper, it will be moving around freely. So the freedom is in knowing the truth for which you have to change here. Nothing to be changed outside. The external changes you do, that is for at the transactional level, those things you can continue doing, and we have succeeded in that, and we are still, progressing. But in this, we are all poor. That's why we suffer. In the beginning also, Madhuji was talking about the unrest in US and all that, and she said, educated. Nobody is educated. Educated means you think. Question. And you will be open to listen. Not just question, think, and then you are not open to listen. No. You are open to listen to the other's views. What kind of education, if you say people are educated, what kind of educated people are they? Anybody, both sides. Nobody is ready to listen. They think I am right, I am right. That's it. So, the moment you are truly educated, this chaos cannot be there. We will sit across the table and we'll discuss. We'll say, yes, hello. Somewhere we'll concede and then we'll see. We'll be human. We'll be, Otherwise, this is not civilization. These are all madness this way. How can it be? See, we say developed nation. We have assumed it. What developed? In what thinking they have developed? Yes, no doubt in the material world, in inventions and discoveries, they have done well. But that doesn't mean they have developed. In one aspect they have developed. And nobody is denying that. It's really, they have done a good job in that area. But in the other areas, they are exposed now. Everywhere. You know, even in India it's the same problem. Even in India, even in that area, we have not developed. There is no original thinking here in our education system that is being encouraged. That's what a lot of parents come and tell. So, in other words, what I wanted to say is that if you are truly educated, education needs to eke out, to draw out. You will question and draw out. You don't take anything for granted. You question, you accept. You understand that anything that is found now to be the truth at the external level, I'm not talking about the internal level, it can change. You can develop on it. You can improve upon it. You don't accept that. This we are doing at the external level, but when it comes to the internal level, we are all miserably failing. That's why he says, year of the ear. Shift the focus of attention from what this ear makes you hear to what this ear which is making it here. From what you see to what makes you see. That's the entire Upanishad. Shift simple example I'll give you. Somebody is calling you names. Donkey, monkey, buffalo, all sorts of names people use. Choicest of abuses. And they're getting angry and then they're calling all these names at you. And you also get involved. How dare you call me buffalo, man? You are a monkey, you know, you get involved. So once when a fellow is calling you these names and he's frothing and fuming, angry, shift your attention from the words to the energy that is there in him which is dissipating at that time. So much energy is there in that fellow getting so worked up and angry. You shift that attention. See, my God, what energy this fellow has. If only this, don't tell that fellow. You will irritate him even more. So, you just see that you won't get worked up. Otherwise you will, calling me buffalo, then you will also get excited. If you shift the attention and see that energy in that person, and you say, my God, this fellow has so much of energy, he doesn't know how to direct it. He's dissipating it. Poor fellow. He's just dissipating it. So then you will be calm. Because you've shifted the attention from the words to the energy. Then the anger will not affect you. But the problem is, that fellow is throwing some abuses, you also get worked up and then you mess up the whole thing. So it's the shifting of attention from the ear, small e, to the capital E, ear. Once you succeed in this, once you get to that subject, then you see that subject is what is the source and everything is essentially evolved from that. And it is that which is lending sentiency to everything. So you are the one who is lighting this world. So now you recollect what we studied in Bhagavad Gita. See, I told you Bhagavad Gita is actually the explanation of the Upanishads. So in Bhagavad Gita, what did we study in the 7th chapter and 9th chapter? Please recollect all that we studied. He says, first he says, the world has come from me. The world is in me, I am in the world. Then he says, world is in me, I am not in it. And then he will say, even the world is not in me. Then you think, yeah, this fellow is confused. And he is confusing us also. But what he is trying to say is, on the relative level, the world has come from Brahman. Brahman is not in the world, world is in Brahman. Means what? World is dependent on Brahman. Brahman can exist without the world. But world cannot exist without Brahman. Like this, cup cannot exist without clay, but clay can exist without being made into cup. So world is in me, I am not in it. Then, even though you are seeing it as a cup, it is still clay only. So what? I am not in the world, not the world is in me. It is only clay. You are seeing it as cup. So this is the Upanishadic thing. Then you become absolutely free. Then what is there? Remaining is only the subject. There is nothing else. You absolutely become free. You don't get affected by the changes. You become changeless. So this, with this, the Upanishad is over. With this verse, the Upanishad is over. But the Upanishad continues explaining it. That's why we have few more verses in this part and then part 2 and part 3, part 4. So let's conclude the class today. Om Purnamadha Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyairva Udhyatmana Va Prakrute Svabhavat Karomi Adhyat Sakalam Parasmai Narayana Eti Samarpayami.